Are you ready? Hardware? I certainly hope so. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this here electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by you-know-who. Yep, that's me, Amelia Dalton. My friends, my electronic countrymen, my engineering partners in crime, Fish Fry is coming to you live and in Technicolor from San Diego, California. Yes, I could get used to that glowing orb in the sky. And folks, I am not only basking in the glow of what seems to be sunshine, we don't get much of that where I'm from, I'm also enjoying the sights, sounds, and PCB goodness that is Altium Live 2019. The theme of Altium Live is Learn, Connect, Get Inspired. And how about we do all three? First up, please welcome Joe Grand, computer engineer, hardware hacker extraordinaire, TV host, member of the legendary hacker group Loft Heavy Industries, and the proprietor of Grand Idea Studio. Joe and I are talking all about the collision between hacking and engineering, his favorite hacking creations, and why he believes that sharing information, big and small, is not only cornerstone to a successful engineering ecosystem, but also humanity as a whole. My guest today is Joe Grand. Welcome to Fish Fry, Joe. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, so first off, you are a computer engineer, hardware hacker, TV host, member of the legendary hacker group Loft Heavy Industries, and the proprietor of Grand Idea Studio. So let's start with that last item first. Tell me about Grand Idea Studio.
So Grand Idea Studio is my company, and I kind of do two things. One, I am a professional design engineer, so I design electronics. Most of the time these days, it's kind of hobbyist electronics and mischievous electronics and fun things kind of for the hacker community. And then I also teach a lot about computer security and hardware hacking and how to defeat security of hardware devices and how people can think about how hackers approach breaking hardware devices. So a little bit of the hacker side, a little bit of the engineering side. Somehow I've been able to turn my passion into being an independent person doing this stuff.
That's super cool. Okay, so let's circle back to Loft Heavy Industries for a minute. Now, for my audience who may not know, what is this hacker group all about? And what was the motivation behind the creation of this group?
To even start to explain the Loft, I have to go back a little bit more where I'd gotten involved in computers in 1982 when I was 7 years old. And at the time, people, you know, most people didn't have computers. So it was really just curious people that were experimenting with computers. I discovered bulletin board systems and kind of the hacker underground at the time, which was very small, but we would trade passwords to computer systems that we found over the modem, and we'd trade ways to get free phone calls and all sorts of stuff. And just having that knowledge was really powerful. I used a lot of that, but as I got older, I stopped once I got in trouble.
Right.
So the Loft kind of came out of the Boston area hacker bulletin board community. And it really was a place where hackers could go and store their computer stuff. We always like to say, like, to move it out of the kitchen and move it out of the bathroom.
We have
lots of computers. So it was started by some of the older guys in the Boston hacker scene. And I was much younger, and I had actually gotten in trouble for some computer-related activities, hacking-related stuff, when I was 16. And that was really a turning point for me, because those guys said, okay, let's let Joe join the Loft. And they became my mentors. And it was a community that started out as a clubhouse. And just, we could hack on our own systems. We'd set up our own software. We'd build hardware projects. And this was in the early 90s. As the cybersecurity community, I'm doing air quotes, became more of an industry, we realized that we could reach more people by not really being the face of hackers, but sharing the good side of what hackers can do and trying to educate the masses about not all hackers are malicious. You know, hackers can solve problems in unique ways and look at all the historical hackers that have existed, and how users need to be able to protect themselves and can't rely on corporations and the software companies to do that, because software companies are big. And if there's a problem in a piece of software, you can't wait 3 months necessarily. And a lot of that came from some of the guys that were working at the Loft were professional security engineers at some pretty serious places, where they realized if they share the information and empower the mainstream with this information, then the users can fix themselves.
Right.
And that's what the Loft really was all about. It's just sharing that hacker message and empowering people to do things on their own without relying on corporations to do all the work for them.
So Joe, you gave a keynote at this year's Altium Live called When Hacking and Engineering Collide, and you outlined some of your favorite projects. Okay, so Joe, give me your top.
That's a tricky one. That's sort of like asking which child is my favorite. It's hard to say. You know, in the presentation, I talked about kind of groups of projects. And really, the presentation was to remind engineers about what it was like when you're building something as a kid, or when you don't have the pressure of time constraints and budget and being, you know, making sure that thing's going to work before you ship it. And think about like when you're just hacking on something or messing around and building something for fun, and to just keep that in the back of your head as you're doing engineering.
Yeah.
So I think as two projects, I think the groups of projects, I know for a fact that Prototype This was a TV show I was on that was on Discovery Channel, but it was a really cool show of sharing the engineering process with the mainstream audience.
Yeah.
So some of those projects, I don't really have a particular favorite, but things that were just totally wild are like, we did this high-tech firefighter pack that we got to actually work with firefighters in Modesto, California. And, you know, these are like huge guys and big mustaches and like serious, serious people.
Right.
And, you know, I come in as like a, you know, engineer, and like, we talked to them about what problems do you have? And we actually got to solve some real problems and make this firefighter pack that had a heads-up display and thermal camera and everything integrated, and just really interesting stuff. And then the firefighters got to use it and see how that affected their job.
Yeah.
You know, we built a kind of robot that could climb stairs so they could haul gear up the stairs so they didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times they haul all this gear up the stairs and they're tired and they can't do their job. So that was really kind of, even though the show didn't turn into real products, they were just prototypes to show the concept, it was just satisfying to know that that type of stuff can exist.
Sure.
But then we built like a self-driving car that could elevate itself and drive over traffic. So I would just say, like, maybe not as a top three, but that show was really one of the favorite things I've ever done. At the time, it wasn't. You know, it was hard work. And having a camera in your face all the time was challenging, especially when you're trying to engineer something. And I could go on about lots of other projects. You know, every project has some value in it. And I actually say, like, I won't design a project unless I want to use it myself, or unless there's something in it that I want to share with the world.
Yeah.
So like the DEF CON badges are another example. And those are electronic badges for DEF CON, which is a hacker conference. It's the world's largest hacker conference. Not malicious hacking, not good hacking. It's everything. You have all sorts of types of, like, I want to learn how to pick locks. So, you know, I want to learn how to do body modification, body biohacking, like all this different stuff. So I'd created the electronic badges for that conference. That's just fun to try new techniques and share my passion of engineering and let people get a piece of hardware who might never have been able to mess around with it before. And like, it's all open source. They can modify it and learn from it and build on it. And like, that's satisfying also, where it doesn't really have a purpose other than it's something that they use at the conference,
right,
but then they can do something with it afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's like the educational side, I think, is kind of fun to see what people do, or to have somebody say, hey, that's cool, I want to be an engineer. Like that's kind of neat. So I guess those are my top two. I can't think of three, but two is good.
Two is definitely good. Okay, so Joe, this is kind of a big question, but you said you realized the importance of sharing information in order to empower others early on in life. And that really struck a chord with me. So let's talk more about that.
Yeah, that was one of the most important things I learned from being involved in the Loft. Being this young kid with guys that were at least 6 years older than me. And at the time when I was 16, they were 22. And like, that's a huge age difference.
Sure.
Even though 22 is still really young, they seemed like ancient.
Right.
But they really taught me the importance of empowering people in sharing information. And that's always what I've liked to do. I teach a lot of classes as far as, you know, for people to understand about hardware hacking. But really it comes down to just letting people realize that they have the power to do what they want to do. Mm. Whether it's designing a product, whether it's fixing something, whether it's questioning something at work, whether it's standing up for themselves, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, as a community, humans were meant to share information and empower other people. The problem is, a lot of times, people like to stand up and be in control of a group or be in control of a situation and not share information to make themselves look better.
Sure.
And that's how it was even in the hacker community back in the day. If you had like the zero-day exploit, or if you had some code that nobody else had, like, that made you powerful, but it also sort of made you lame because you weren't sharing that with other people.
Right, yeah.
If anybody listening has kids, it's like that. It's like you're sort of teaching your children things, and then you see them grow and take what you have taught them and then use it in their own way, right? Yeah. And kind of move forward with it. And that's really about sharing information with, especially with engineering and with hacking, is you empower somebody, you give them the tools that maybe you've created, or you give them a technique, and then they can go off and use it in their own way. And that's what kind of builds on this just general knowledge that's out there. And keeping that closed to yourself doesn't really do a service to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I feel. So most of the projects that I release are open source hardware, open source software people can look at and learn from and build from. Not all of them. Sometimes there has to be legal constraints around things, but
sure.
In general, it's, you know, you give people inspiration and you give people power, and then they go off and do great things. And that's the whole point of living, I think.
That is great. All right, Joe, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, since you haven't been on my show before, I'm going to ask you my standard question. So here we go. You have one last meal on planet Earth. That's it. You're going to eat one last thing for the rest of your life. What would it be?
That's that is off the cuff. This is really sad, because as soon as you asked that, the only thing that popped into my head was kale.
Okay.
Yeah. And I like kale, but I don't like love kale.
Right.
Oh man. And like pickles just popped into my head, but like I make pickles.
Oh, cool.
But I don't, you know, I'm not in love with pickles.
Right.
I don't know if I would choose that as my last meal. That might be the hardest question that anyone's ever asked me.
Yes!
What would you eat? Because at least if I was on death row, I'd have like a long time to think about it.
Right.
All right. So I would say for my last meal would probably be a Beyond Burger.
Oh.
So I'm vegan.
Yeah.
And I only eat plants. And Beyond Burger is sort of like a, you know, it's like vegan junk food.
Sure. Right?
It's not like you're eating really healthy.
Yeah.
But it's still really good.
Yeah.
And I think I would like that, because then I wouldn't worry about all the oils and the fat in it, because it's my last meal anyway.
Totally.
I'd probably do that, and probably wouldn't even have a bun. Like, I would just eat the burger, because then the bun like takes up space.
True. Yeah. Yes.
So I think just the straight up Beyond Burger grilled. That's it.
Nice.
Done.
All right. Well, Joe, this was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
Next up, please welcome Robert Ferenc, founder of Fedival Academy, another keynote from this year's Altium Live conference. Robert and I are chatting about the challenges of hardware design process implementation and why conferences like Altium Live may be just the thing we all need to keep us all on the same hardware page. My guest today is Robert Ferenc. Thank you so much for joining me today, Robert.
Thank you very much for inviting me for this podcast.
Okay, so Robert, you are very well known for your YouTube channel, your instructional videos, and hardware design courses. And you're the founder of Fedival Academy. So tell me more about this academy.
I created the academy to help people, engineers, usually young engineers or people who are finishing universities. I'm trying to share the knowledge, what is not very often taught at university, something more practical, which can help them to start the new jobs or, you know, become better engineers. And that's what actually I try to do in the Fedival Academy.
You also run several successful open source projects. So tell me more about that.
I started creating the online courses. I actually found out that one of the problems, I don't have enough materials where people could practice what they would like to learn, because most of the complicated designs, they are like closed, or the companies, they will not share this video. So we basically had to design our own boards, which we could use for teaching people. There was no reason why to keep these designs closed. So we opened the design, and that's actually how we created a couple of open source boards, from a simple board like 28 pins. It's very similar to Arduino. And we also have a number of processor boards, which are more complex. We use them to teach interfaces like memory layout or BGA fanout. And that's why we actually created these open source boards, and that's why we have them.
Excellent. Now, you presented a keynote at this year's Altium Live called How Other Companies Implement Their Hardware Design Process. Now, this is a very popular subject here at EE Journal. First, what do you think are the biggest challenges for hardware design process implementation?
I think the biggest challenge is not knowing what you can do or how other companies do it. That's why I decided for this topic, because most people, they only work in a couple of companies during your lifetime. There is not kind of enough space where to see how, I don't know, 10 or 20 companies do hardware design, because usually you work, what I know, people work in like 2, 3, maximum 5 companies, and that's everything what you get. So the challenge is, I think they don't know exactly what could be changed or improved. They are not sure if they are doing it right or if they could do it better.
Now, this is a problem that everyone encounters, right? From startups all the way to the big guys.
Yes, basically it's same for everyone, because even if you are a startup, you don't know actually how to start. Most or many people in startup, they are young. Some of them, they don't have even like real experience, but depends on who, you know, who are their employees. Sometimes the employers are experienced people.
Now, Robert, where do you think the solutions for these challenges lie?
The biggest problem is not solution, but first I would like to explain the problem. The problem is this information or how they do it in the companies can be kind of part of know-how, and companies don't want to maybe share this information. So the solution would be like to talk a little bit more about this. It can be done, for example, on conferences like this, where people may share part of the design process or part of how they do it in the companies. From my experience, many times the training companies, they may be more theoretical, and also it's not always easy to implement hardware design process in specific companies, because it may be very different, not only between companies with different size, but it's also, it can be different between companies, what kind of technologies they use or what they are developing, what kind of products they are developing. So every company may need different solution, and that can make it harder to actually come up with some one universal solution for everyone. I don't know.
I agree. All right, Robert, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, here we go. Since you haven't been on my show before, I ask this a lot of my guests. If you had one last meal on planet Earth, that's it? That's all you're going to eat for the rest of your life, what would it be?
I have not really thought about this.
Sure.
Because I'm not sure if I'm so important at that moment for me.
Right.
Like, kind of meal. I would be probably thinking about something else. I'm not saying I don't have favorite meals. I do. But I just eat it and that's it.
All right, Robert. Well, thank you so much for joining me. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you very much.
And a podcast episode about Altium Live would be completely amiss if I did not mention that just today, Friday, October 11th, Altium released Altium Designer 20, which has some super cool new capabilities, including interactive routing, new high-speed PCB routing capabilities, new high-voltage design capabilities, an enhanced user interface, and user-driven quality improvements, and a whole lot more. So if you want even more information about Altium Designer 20, of course, I've included a link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, well, if LinkedIn is more your thing, then sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, keyword EE Journal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, yep, you guessed it, me. And by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of October 11th, 2019, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.